forth a due pass recommendation and rescinded the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there discussion on the motion?
It will move to Ways and Means, Mr.
It will not.
It will not.
It came to us with a referral to Ways and Means, but we don't believe it doesn't have to go to Ways and Means.
I just wanted to make one comment for the record.
Please.
That is that this also requires two extra positions and might be the need for additional staff in the bill.
Kelly, would you come up, please? You respond to Representative Verger's question.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Kelly Tater, Department of Transportation. Mr. Chair and Representative Verger, it is anticipated that by changing the structure of the program for teen licensing, problem teen drivers, that we will see more of them than we do today. Because remember, this is the one that today only convictions are considered part of the program, and this adds accidents and also streamlines it to get to them faster, less hand-holding, as you pointed out before. And so it is in the governor's recommended budget. This bill is considered in there. And so...
Follow-up, please. Is that in the $137,000?
Mr. Chair, Representative Verger, yes, it is.
Thank you. Any other questions? Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Pedlin?
Aye.
Representative Krupp?
Excuse.
Representative Merkley?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Representative Bridges?
Aye.
Representative Zahner?
Aye.
Chair Starr?
Aye. Motion passed. Is this, a bill that we could put on the consent agenda? What's the attitude of the committee about putting this bill on the consent agenda? Is there a concern about that?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Devlin.
I think if you could adequately explain it to both caucuses, you wouldn't run into a problem. But given some of the things that are occurring in terms of where caucuses are spending their time, I don't know if that time would be available to both. And I think when members see the fiscal statement, they're going to probably react to it without understanding why it has the fiscal statement.
Okay. I think it's good insight. Do I have a volunteer to carry the bill? Representative Rosenbaum will carry. Thank you very much. With that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 298. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3071. John, can you give us an outline of the bill, please?
Chair Starr, members of the committee, House Bill 3071 requires Oregon Department of Transportation to adopt rules in consultation with appropriate experts designating reporting requirements for person with medical condition or cognitive or functional impairment that affects the person's ability to drive safely. It grants immunity from civil liability to person reporting condition in good faith. It requires medical information and report to be confidential. It becomes effective on January 1st, 2003. Committee members, you should have a copy of the proposed -1 amendment. Basically, this amendment clarifies medical information to be reported that directly impacts person's ability to operate motor vehicle safely. In the original language, you see there was some concern by medical professionals that the requirement was to give a medical diagnosis. So the amendment's intended purpose is to clarify that language. There is no revenue impact on this bill, and we have yet to receive a fiscal impact statement. Thank you, Chair Starr.
Thank you very much. I'd like to have Irene Hobson, Phyllis Rand, and Andy Miller. You can come up together. Whoever would like to go can start.
She's first.
Introduce yourself for the record.
They say I'm first.
Very good.
Good morning, Chairman Starr and members of the Transportation Committee.
I am Irene Hobson, and I am an advocate for AARP in Oregon, a volunteer. AARP has over 440,000 members in Oregon, and I came to speak in support of House Bill 3071. We feel that the legislative intent is very important that that be clear on this bill. Section 2 says that the determination regarding a person's ability to safely operate a motor vehicle may not be based solely on the diagnosis of a medical condition or cognitive or functional impairment, but must be based on the actual effects of that condition or impairment on the person's ability to safely operate a motor vehicle. And as stated now in Section 2, we feel that it's very important to show legislative intent of fairness. We also feel strongly that after a driver's reexamination by a DMV license reexaminer, it should be explained in writing the options available to that driver to correct a functional impairment. Once the impairment is corrected by using an assistive device or a surgery for cataracts or whatever, that the driver should be allowed another reexamination in with timely scheduling. And then we're very fortunate to live in a time where there have been medical breakthroughs on many serious illnesses that we have. And I have had experience with a friend named Vern who had severe tremors so bad that he could barely function and could not drive. He has had a surgery, a new surgery that they've just recently started doing to, I can't tell you what they did, but to correct this. He has no tremors at all anymore and no cognitive impairment. And it's just amazing how he has improved. The other thing on the news recently has been that they are trying to develop a vaccine for Alzheimer's, and that they also are experimenting with gene therapy surgery, and we feel like that we live in a fortunate time for medical breakthroughs, and that as things change, as those things occur, because of new medicines or surgeries or technical innovations, that people who avail themselves of those things should be allowed another reexamination, for a license to drive. AARP feels that self-sufficiency, dignity, and independent living are the goals of most older people, and transportation is essential to achieve these goals. AARP Oregon supports House Bill 3071 and believes that the rules and regulations implemented after this bill passes should reflect the importance of these goals. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Good morning.
We'll take all the testimony and then open it up for questions.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Chairman Starr and members of the Transportation Committee, I'm Phyllis Rand with the Governor's Commission on Senior Services, and I'm the legislative coordinator for the commission. And I'm here every day during the legislature, so you probably have seen me around a bit. For background purposes, I represent the commission on the Older Drivers Advisory Committee, and as you've heard, I represent only one of this bill represents only one of the 26 recommendations from the advisory committee. I'm You know, I just think that since you already have my testimony, I'm going to kind of cut to the chase. And House Bill 3071 would require the Department of Transportation to adopt rules to require reporting of medical conditions or cognitive or functional impairment that affects a person's ability to drive, regardless of age of the person. This is a good bill, and I'm hoping that it will pass. Now, I would also like to just share a few things with you about the advisory committee. Since I was a representative from the Governor's Commission on Senior Services to this committee, I would like to just share some basic information about how the committee functions so that you'll know that we were not just operating in a vacuum. And there were 13 members on the committee from around the state, both professional and people, and it took about a year to complete our study. We had input from around the state. We had what they call town hall meetings, where people could come and ask questions and also give recommendations. We had input during the meetings that we held. We functioned on a consensus model, and I just am so proud of the work that we did. And we have a couple of the members of the committee here today as well. And so that's really all I want to say.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Chair Starr and members of the Transportation Committee, my name is Andy Miller, and I represent the Oregon chapters of the Alzheimer's Association. I, too, was privileged to be a member of that wonderful Older Driver Study. And my testimony today may appear that I'm not quite supportive, but I had one issue that I really hammered home, and all the people on the committee knew about it, and that is the reporting of a diagnosis is not a good idea. And with that, I'll read my prepared testimony. The Alzheimer's Association is concerned about the safety of persons with Alzheimer's disease and those around them, but does not believe a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease automatically means a person is incapable of driving. Likewise, because of its implications for the patient-doctor relationship, we do not favor a requirement that physicians report to motor vehicles authorities when a person is diagnosed. The association is concerned that an automatic link of a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease to loss of driving privileges could be a barrier to people seeking diagnosis and effective early care. The association also acknowledges that it is important for those who are at risk for being in a motor vehicle crash, harming either themselves or others, be tested for driving ability. In order for this testing to occur, either the person has to self-report or he or she must be reported as a person whose medical condition or cognitive or functional impairment affects that person's ability to safely operate a motor vehicle. As a participating member of the Older Driver Study, the association had a voice in recommending changes in reporting requirements. House Bill 3071 incorporates those recommendations with one exception. The Alzheimer's Association requests an amendment clarifying the information that must be reported. The name of the disease or the report of a diagnosis of a disease should not be part of that report. What should be reported, is the effect of that condition or impairment on the person's ability to safely operate a motor vehicle. The Alzheimer's Association is committed to supporting the recommendations of the Department of Transportation, Driver and Motor Vehicle Services. We urge you to support House Bill 3071 with the suggested amendments.
Thank you very much for your testimony. The we do have an amendment to the bill.
I just got it this morning.
Okay, does that satisfy your concern?
Absolutely.
Very good. Are there other questions? Representative Nelson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I can find the amendment. Sorry. Thank you. Thank you, ladies, for being here today. My biggest concern about this bill is, and I thought perhaps it would come up in your concerns, is who are the medical experts who are going to make this determination? As we know, they differ. And maybe I need to ask Transportation Department. I don't know who they have.
Yeah, we have a ODOT representative coming up next.
Great. Because my concern is the medical expert selected by the individual or the individual's, family, or by, the Department of Transportation? So that is my biggest concern with this measure. And I wondered if any of you had...
Do any of you want to respond to Representative Nelson's comment?
About that.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, I would defer to ODOT. I do not have those listings in front of me, but we did discuss at length, and we're very inclusive, including such things as such people as pharmacists, and people see older people quite frequently. So I think that their answer will satisfy your question.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for these?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you for your testimony and for your hard work on this working group. I wanted to go back, Ms. Miller, to your testimony and make sure I understand it. You started off by saying we do not favor a requirement that physicians report to motor vehicles authorities when a person is diagnosed. Are you saying that it shouldn't be a requirement, it should be optional, or just that you don't want it to be linked to the name of the disease? And should it just be a report saying that there's a concern?
Chair Starr and Representative Merkley, yes, it's the naming of the disease that is the issue. And one of the things that we're really concerned with, in addition to the earlier testimony about a possible treatment, which is really making monumental strides, and we're very excited about that, people are being diagnosed earlier and earlier. In fact, if you are going to have Alzheimer's disease, you probably have it now. Probably have it 20 years before you show any symptoms. I was just at a conference in Washington, D.C., where people were testifying in front of the Senate Select Committee on Aging, and these people were in their late 50s and early 60s and had been diagnosed. They were, some of them, still driving and very capable, and also very capable of writing their own testimony. They simply had short-term memory loss and were able to operate. So we are concerned that if someone is diagnosed, we want people to be diagnosed early so any treatment may be started and hopefully allow these people to function as normally as possible for the remainder of their lives. If there is a stigma put on Alzheimer's disease and a diagnosis means automatically removing a license or even that possibility, that would be our concern. We do, however, want unsafe drivers off the road. We do want to help families get people tested. It's very difficult for families to report. I have a mother I should have reported and didn't. She hit a school bus. That's why I'm here. That's why I was here on 2446 in the last session. We do need to have people reported, and if the families cannot handle it, I think that all the help we can get from the medical community and others will serve that purpose. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
And more so.
To ask you a follow-up question, the amendment that we have takes away the word medical condition, but it does say that the report will include a description of how the person's current medical status affects a person's ability to safely operate a motor vehicle. I would think that if a doctor is reporting someone who has Alzheimer's, they're going to say that in their report under this language in the bill, that because of this disease and the state of this disease and its effect upon the person's ability to react to traffic conditions or whatever, they're concerned about their ability to drive. So I'm not sure this language precludes that the name of the disease wouldn't be in the report.
Chair Starr and Representative Merkley, if a doctor wants to report the name of the disease, I don't have an issue with that. I have an issue with the doctor being mandated to report a diagnosis and thus be unwilling to do so, to give that diagnosis. The language, I'm not a doctor, of course, but I can think of some language that would work very well, is that a person's deteriorating cognitive state indicates that driving may be an issue and to test that person. There's all kinds of language you can use to talk about a condition without putting a stigma on it or forcing that person into a box. We've had experiences in California where there was a mandatory reporting of a diagnosis, where the diagnoses fell off sharply, We know that the incidence of Alzheimer's disease is on the increase, and so to see a sharp drop in the diagnosis rate was a real good indication to the association that this wasn't the way to go.
Additional questions? Mm-hmm. You mentioned in your testimony another concern that I've had, which is that people may be reluctant to go to their doctors if they feel their doctors are going to be reporting them to the state. Do you feel that is there the possibility that greater harm will be done by people shying away from going to the doctor as a result of this breach of confidentiality?
Chair Starr, Representative Merkley, I think that what we're doing here is taken out of context somewhat. There is a public education initiative and a changing of the actual reporting form that goes along with this. Those are issues, and I think ODOT can address this more clearly, that did not require legislation. And it's part of a package. So taken in isolation, you have a reasonable question. But when we work with what we consider to be a private-public partnership in educating consumers and the medical community, we hope to see increased reporting without stigma. It's a difficult situation, there's no 100% good way to do this. I think this is as good as we can get. We worked very hard to come up to this conclusion. There are going to be people that will not report. I didn't report my mother.
No question. Yes. Ms. Hobson?
Yes.
You noted that you would like to have a requirement that options be explained in writing. Do you want to see that as an amendment to this bill?
If the committee is interested in an amendment to the bill to require that, paragraph 4 and 5 of what I, pardon me, 3 and 4 of what I presented would take care of that, and the committee could run that through legal counsel and so forth.
Thank you. I think it's a good suggestion. Appreciate you coming forward.
And Chairman Starr, I'd just like to ask on the amendment, the last line where the state health officer shall consider this information in determining whether to issue a certificate of eligibility. Is that really a certificate of eligibility or of ineligibility? And is it a certificate of eligibility to drive or ineligibility not to drive? Or is it to take an examination or not to take an examination?
I think those are some very good questions, and I will kind of punt to a certain extent and ask when we have the ODOT representative to address those issues. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chairman Starr. Would it be of concern to y'all that there is no clause for arbitration? You know, should it be necessary? I mean, if we didn't agree with the state health officer that they're in this, should that have been included in the amendment? An opportunity to battle for yourself should you feel that this is an
Chairman,
inaccuracy?
Chairman Starr, Representative Nelson. I'm not familiar with this ORS that they're quoting. I don't know whether there's an appeal in that. Perhaps DMV could answer that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. An additional question I have about the bill that perhaps you all can help me with is that it doesn't appear to address who will be required to report. And my colleague made allusion to this, reference to this. Why not? Why haven't we specified who's going need to make reports under this, or at least narrowed it? Because right now it sounds like the field is as broad as our society is, that anyone could be required under the authorization we're giving in this legislation.
Would you like me to take that?
Yes.
Chairman Starr, Representative Merkley. Again, I will ask to pass that question along to our friends at ODOT. As far as I'm concerned, every citizen has a responsibility to report. I have no problems with how broad it is. Our issue here is to try to make the road safe for people without taking away rights of people who have that right to drive. So if you have questions afterwards, we have not yet heard what they're going to say either.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony coming to Capitol today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. I'd like to have Mari Miller.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, good morning. For the record, my name is Mari Miller, and I'm the manager of program services at DMV, and with me this morning is Kelly Taylor from ODOT. In the past 5 years, driver safety issues associated with declining skills due to the aging process has received a lot of national attention, and last session, the Oregon legislature passed a law requiring DMV to study this issue and to return this session with recommendations on how Oregon might begin to address the problems associated with aging and driving. When we began the study, we had limited information on the magnitude of the problem or its possible solutions. But now that the study is complete, it's very clear to us that this is a very complex issue, the issue of declining skills due to aging, and that our DMV vision test alone is not the solution to these problems, no matter how frequently we might administer that test. In the 8 town halls that we held throughout the state, we also heard the message from the public that they have the expectation that DMV will have reasonable systems in place to identify at-risk drivers and to, when necessary, revoke driving privileges. 3 months ago, I presented to you the findings of the older driver study. As the ladies before us testified, all three of them participated in some way in those processes. And we laid out for you the 26 recommendations as well as the department's strategic plan on how we might over the next 4 years implement all of those recommendations. Only 2 of the recommendations require an actual change in the statute substantively. And the funding for House Bill 3071, as well as those other changes that we mentioned, the 26 changes, not all of them are going to be implemented this biennium, but those that will be are in the governor's recommended budget. I will only be talking to you today about 3071, which, as you heard, expands the list of cognitive and functional impairments that must be reported to us by medical experts. The Older Driver Advisory Committee found, and it was very much supported by the research, there was a great deal of research that went into the study, that age alone is not a good predictor of whether somebody is going to have declining skills to be able to drive. So just having DMV administer a vision test or test people more frequently is not the solution to the problem. But there are 2 measures that would be more effective than just more frequent testing. And one is to increase the number of referrals to DMV of at-risk drivers so that we can work with those individuals and provide them with assistance. And the other is to develop a more extensive screening tool that allows us to look at more than just vision problems, which is today what DMV offices are pretty much limited to. We already have in Oregon a medical re-exam program. In fact, our medical re-exam program has been modeled by many states throughout the country. Oregon has been frequently referred to in other assemblies like this one around the country as a model state for having a medical re-exam program. But our law today only requires the reporting of conditions that would result in somebody passing out or blacking out. Other conditions that affect driving, for example, people who are legally blind don't have to be reported to DMV to have a review of their case. People who've lost sensation in their legs and feet so that they can't feel pressure on a accelerator or a brake pedal go unreported. People who have significant worsening of their ability to react to traffic around them go unreported. I want to emphasize that the role of the physician is not changing under 3071. There already is a requirement that reporting be done. What has changed is that there is a recognition, not only in this state but in other states, that it's not just the blacking out or the loss of consciousness that affects driving, and therefore there's an effort to try to get that expanded to include other things as well that might affect a person's ability to drive. You've heard testimony that if a person voluntarily restricts their own driving, or if a family member coaches them, or a physician counsels a person to stop driving, that this would significantly reduce the issues we have today. However, these voluntary measures don't always work, and when that happens, we need to have in place an opportunity for physicians to report and to be able to say to their patients and to counsel with their patients about driving. And I want to emphasize also that it's not the physician who's making the decision that the patient should not drive. DMV is the one who's going to evaluate the person and make that determination. Oftentimes, when a driver improvement counselor comes to us after they've been referred by a policeman, we get an awful lot of referrals by, excuse me, by policemen and family members. We don't take away their license. What we might do is restrict their license in a way that they only drive in daylight hours or on non-busy streets or non-busy hours. We oftentimes help people select routes that they can go to their normal places they have to do errands without being in heavy traffic. And it was also mentioned that providing people with options of what they can do to help improve their functional limitations. We do that now in our counseling program, where a counselor will provide people with names of rehabilitation counselors and other available community resources to help them improve maybe the strength in their lower extremities so that they can drive more safely. But if we don't have referrals to this program, there's nothing that we can really do to help. And these drivers continue to drive at a risk, at great risk to themselves and to the general public. During the study, we heard testimony from physicians who were concerned about three things. The first thing they were concerned about was patient confidentiality. They were also concerned about civil liability, and they were concerned about the damage to the patient-doctor relationship. If they were going to be turned into DMV cops, they didn't want to be turned into DMV cops. And I don't want them to be turned into DMV cops. These are all valid concerns, and we believe that the bill addresses all of these. There's protections on confidentiality and civil liability in the statute, and we propose that DMV work very closely with the medical community and actually fashion administrative rules that are mutually agreeable to both the medical profession and to DMV. That would be non-burdensome to them in their daily practice and will minimize the concern that the patient will not seek treatment because they don't want to be their doctor to turn them into DMV. For example, I would not envision that this set of rules would start immediately with a referral to DMV. I would propose, at least, I don't know what how the medical community would feel about this, but I think they would embrace the idea that the first steps would be counseling with family members and with the patient themselves. And I believe that those steps would take care of many of the problems, and it would only be the situation where somebody was not listening to their family, wasn't listening to the physician, that the physician would have this law to deal with, which is to report it to DMV. In closing, I'd like to say that without question, this is not an easy easy problems to solve. You heard testimony from Andy Miller that there is not a 100% perfect solution here, and I agree with her. But a very diverse group of experts and citizens, many of whom have very competing interests, spent a year studying and debating these issues, and they arrived at a consensus. They avoided gridlock by negotiating and compromising, and their goal was to come up with a comprehensive solution to this problem, which I think they did. The department urges you to capitalize on the hard work and collective wisdom of the Older Driver Advisory Committee study, and we ask you to send House Bill 3071 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That concludes my prepared remarks, and I'm open to answer any questions you have, and I think we have some leftover questions from the last group. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Nelson, do you want
to... Now the time. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you very much for being here, Ms. Miller. Could you possibly let me know who we qualify as medical experts? Is that defined?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, what the statute includes that as part of the rulemaking process, that we would, in consultation with the medical community, also agree on which areas we would include as part of the people that report. I think one of the things that I learned from doing the older driver study is that there are so many experts out there that understand how the real world works, and that I might think this particular medical professional might be a good person to report. And just because I'm using maybe my knowledge of the world, but I don't have the specific knowledge that medical community does, and so I would ask them to help us decide which areas of the medical profession would be the most appropriate to be making these kind of referrals. It specifically was not put in the bill because we want to be able to fashion those also with the medical community.
Thank you. Follow-up, Mr. Chair. I don't quite see this in the bill, but that determination is to be made by somebody.
It would be, if you look at line 12 of the bill, it leads in consultation with medical experts, et cetera, the Department of Transportation shall adopt rules requiring reporting and designating persons required to report to the department a person whose medical condition or cognitive or functional impairment affects, and so on. So that's the language that I'm referring to, that we would, in consultation with medical experts, designate those members of their community that would report.
Thank you very much. Follow-up, Mr. Chair. So I'm still of the mind that there is no specific definition of what is a medical expert in this, as I see it. And if an individual is designated to report and does not report, is there a liability with this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, there's not a specific liability in the statute, no. There's not.
And then, excuse me.
You have a follow-up?
This is the last question mm-hmm. from previous, please, Mr. Chair. And then, we talked earlier about arbitration, you know, should we have a diagnosis that we feel is inadequate, or maybe it was a temporary, you know, three-day flu that made somebody nervous or cloudy head. I don't see a clause that gives that flexibility.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, currently, and it would still be the law, a person who would have their license restricted or revoked would have an opportunity for a contested case hearing. They would have the full due process rights to present their case to an impartial administrative officer. Of course, there's also the informal process that anybody could use who wanted to object to it based upon something like you mentioned. Perhaps somebody was just having a bad day when they took a drive test or something. They could also request a retest and explain it, that sort of thing. But in the last analysis, no one ever has their driving privileges removed or restricted without having an opportunity to contest that through normal channels.
Follow-up, please, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Are there medical experts employed in DMV?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, no, Representative Nelson, we do not have medical experts at DMV. We partner with the Department of Health, and we have several physicians over there who actually review these cases, and they're the ones who make the medical determination that someone cannot be driving anymore because their functional ability has been too compromised for them to safely drive.
Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on the scope of those who might be required to report, you made reference to the language in line 9 and 10, but that's only language applying to how you go about developing the rules. It appears that there's nothing in this bill which constrains or limits or narrows the field of people who could possibly be required to report. Under this authority, you could require family members to report a condition. Isn't that the case?
Mr. Chair, Representative Merkley, that certainly was not the intent of the language here. And I think, you know, in looking at it, it's possible that it could be read that way, designating persons required to report. All I can say to you is that was not the intent. The intent is that this only applies to medical professionals and that the persons that we would be identifying to report would only be those in consultation with the medical profession that we agreed were the right people to be doing the reporting.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm.
This is being motivated by concern about the number of accidents caused by conditions such as blindness, ability to react to traffic, and loss of sensation in the legs. Do we have any statistics that you can share with the committee that show us the scope of this problem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Merkley, statistics specific to Oregon are very difficult to find. In fact, even at a federal level, it's difficult to have the kind of statistics where you can be fairly sure that you have all of the accidents reported. They're based upon accident reports, and not all accidents are reported. Not all accidents actually designate the age of the person who is driving the vehicle or who is the cause of the accident. So I want to clarify some of the numbers that I'll give you based upon that. In talking with other states and in talking with our national association, the issue around having adequate statistics on older drivers is one that is being addressed throughout the country right now to come up with better numbers. Some of the numbers that we are working with is that the number of older drivers is going to double by the year 2030. Travel of seniors is projected to be 4 to 5 times as great as it is currently. In Oregon alone, in just a 2-year period, the number of older drivers older than 65 grew by over 5%, which is faster than the national average. With no change in the current crash fatality rates per distance traveled, the number of older driver fatalities will increase 300 to 400% during that period that I'm referred to. And if so, if these predictions are true, then older driver fatalities will be 35 to 71% greater than the total number of alcohol-related traffic fatalities. There's not specific numbers on that.
No,
but you need to have no idea. Oh, yes. A point of clarification, Representative Merkley. I'm not meaning to say that these numbers are specifically relating to blindness or to
loss of
sensation of the legs. I don't think that there are numbers specifically relating to those. Those are just the kinds of examples that we heard during the public testimony that we received of the types of things other than vision loss
or
passing out that would cause a person to not be able to function properly. Some of the other information that was looked at, and I have to tell you that there was something like 6 volumes of research information on this that the older driver group looked at. The types of things we looked at were that the number of crashes for persons age 55 and older is up, injuries are up and growing, older people are 4 times more likely to be hospitalized when they're in a crash, their recovery is slower and less complete, and most crashes involving the elderly are multiple vehicle crashes. One of the things when you look at crashes, it's like a bell-shaped curve. The 16 to 25-year-old is way up, and the 65 to 80-plus is way up. It's almost like an inverse bell-shaped curve, and the older driver population in terms of the vehicle miles traveled in comparison to the 16 to 25-year-old is actually growing faster and is expected to exceed the younger driver problems. And so it's based upon that kind of concern at a national level that last session there were several bills to try to deal with the issue. And because there was so little known at the time about what other states were doing or what problems we might be able to address, that would be supported by a wide range of constituent groups in the state, that it was recommended that we pull together these groups and to fashion some ideas of how we might address the problem in a way that none of these groups felt we were approaching it from the wrong direction.
Another question, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'll just make an observation that earlier we had testimony that it really isn't age that's statistically related, but conditions that are statistically related to accidents. And your testimony is we don't have any data on conditions, and you're giving us age statistics. And so that it bothers me, the disconnect there. My next concern is that there's nothing in the language of this bill which assure someone that they have the right to a test when they are reported. Under line 20 and 21 and 22, it says that the determination may not be based solely on the diagnosis, but must be based on the actual effect of that condition or impairment. And we're asking the doctor or whomever to report upon the actual effect. Why isn't there language that says that this just triggers a testing process? And are there conditions that you really can't test for, so essentially a doctor's report that there's a problem is the definitive factor?
Representative Chair, Chair Starr, Representative Merkley, the testing is not done on a medical basis. Oftentimes what happens is the person is taken out into a vehicle and actually tested to see if their condition affects their ability to drive. Another situation might be where the physician reports specific problems that are so extreme that we won't even, the health physician that works for the state would not even recommend that we take the person out to do an actual drive test because it would be too risky to do that. In those situations, the state health officer would ask specific questions of the doctor to try to narrow that down a little bit more. There's a lot of communication and process that happens between the counselor, the patient, the doctor, in that kind of a situation. It's handled on a very individual basis depending upon the circumstance.
It sounds like the short answer is
a person is not guaranteed a right to a test. It's the judgment of the state official involved.
Chair Starr, Representative Merkley, I think that would be correct, that they're not entitled to a test if they're not safe to be on the road.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I might, Kelly Tater with the Department of Transportation. Might I borrow one of your statute books back there to look up a statute that might help answer this? The 807 chapter.
Happened to.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Verger, then Devlin.
Yes, I have some problems with this bill. For one thing, I don't like doctors being police for the DMV. I think you've heard some comments from the committee about other problems. Also, there's somewhat of a double standard here. If you are a younger driver, like a teen, you're based on citations, but in the older driver, you're not based on any. In other words, an older driver can be driving, have no citation. Then I'd like to bring up elder abuse, because I think that is a very real thing in our society, and I see an opportunity here for another kind of abuse that could be used. But I have a question, and that is for Kelly. Kelly, what is a driver improvement counselor? And what do you base this on, that twice as many persons would be reported as are being reported now?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Representative Verger, a driver improvement counselor is someone who is who meets with both anyone, whether it's that teen driver that's gotten convictions, or whether it's someone who is has been reported and we're working with to establish whether or not they can remain driving. They meet one-on-one. They have training. They have options that they're available, whether it's a driver who's having trouble with traffic laws and they go through defensive driving versus reviewing with the person the medications they're on. Sometimes people are on mixing medications, and sometimes doctors aren't even aware of it if it's coming from two different doctors. And so it's a very customized interview to figure out what that person's issue is and what we can do to help that person become safe, legal, and continue to drive. The last thing we want to do is remove the person's license. I mean, that is always the last. And now, if I might, Representative Verger, I think this might help also answer the question Representative Merkley had about what's the process of re-exam. It's in another statute. You have to understand there's always different statutes and they complement each other. If I might, Mr. Chair, could I read a little bit just from this? It's under 807.090. And it talks about establishing your eligibility notwithstanding disease or disability. If the department, and I'm just going to kind of paraphrase a little bit here, I'm not going to read every word. If the department determines that a person may not be eligible for a license because the person has a history of physical or mental disease or disability that could impair their ability to safely operate a motor vehicle, the person may establish an eligibility of license or, you know, as follows. By personally demonstrating to the satisfaction of the department, notwithstanding the disease or disability, the person qualified to safely operate a motor vehicle. That's the test Representative Berkeley was asking about. So that is in statute that we would test someone, can test someone. Someone can say, let me show you I can drive.
However, the language you used was the person may. However, it's my understanding that that's really up to the department whether they want to allow the person to take that test.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Merkley, we will allow them to test, and we do. In fact, in that driver improvement counselor, that's one of the things that they ask the person, would you like to just go with me and do a little short drive? And we offer. It's only when we believe that the person's condition is so dangerous, either from our observation or from the doctor's recommendations or from the state health officer, that we do not test them. Otherwise, we do. And then if the department reasonably believes that the person's ability may impair them to safely operate, that's when we can obtain the certificate of eligibility. And you before had a question, is a certificate of eligibility or ineligibility? It's a certificate of eligibility saying I am eligible to drive. And that comes from the state health officer after reviewing everything. But before that, we can do the test, and we do, unless it's some really, really dangerous situation for both them and us, we go ahead and we do test them. Now, as for the doubling, I'm going to have to defer to Maury, because Maury worked on this a little closer than I did to know what numbers are out there and why we think that it may double.
I need to follow up, though, and ask you, so you do now, at the present time, have driver improvement counselor.
Mr. Chair and Representative Verger, yes, we do. We have a medical and re-exam program. We have a driver improvement program. Yes, that operates today.
And these people would be reported all around the state. Does this department at the state level handle all of these people?
Mr. Chair and Representative Verger, yes. Because sometimes it is a matter of, as Representative Merkley was asking about the test, in which case we have examiners around the state. You know, in regular field offices, in regular local offices. It can be a drive test with a person there. It can be the drive improvement counselors travel around and do meet with people, yes. So this, we service everyone around the state, yes.
And now your statistic, please.
Yes, Chair Starr, Representative Verger. Right now, we do get physician reports on a voluntary basis. We don't get that many of them, but we do get physician reports. And there's no scientific way to do this. We had to make an assumption based upon discussions we had on the older driver advisory group of how often these might end up having to be reported, and we chose doubling it. We had we had suggestions that it might triple it or quadruple it, but we are believing that a doubling it would be a conservative place to start.
Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, colleague, I was here during last session when we considered the bill that then Representative Montgomery proposed to base this on age, and those were very highly contested hearings. And one of the things that came out clearly in those hearings was that you know, the people that are here testifying today were testifying that they did not want, many of the people were testifying, a standard that was based on age. So I think that was one of the reasons why in this work group you came back and looked at this issue. And clearly what we're putting in this thing is not a standard based on age. They wanted, in those hearings in the last session, and I think they want here today, an actual standard based on actual abilities to drive. And so that's what's been tried to be put in the bill. Now, one of the things is that you can be 85 or 90 years old or 95 years old, not suffer from any cognitive disorder, not suffer from any loss of being able to feel pressure on a pedal, do all of those things. But if you look at this in a different way, and when you see these statistics on age, we all recognize that for some, and I'm no medical expert, but I've seen plenty of these graphs, that for certain disease disorders, there may be occurrences where they occur when you're 40 years old or 35 years old, but when you get older, when you get up to 60, 65, 70, the occurrences of these increase. Alzheimer's may start when you're 40 years old. I mean, you may be able to be diagnosed now, maybe soon, when you're 35 or 40 years old. But the later stages may not occur until you're much older, you know, 65, 70, 75 years old. So when she cites statistics that are based on age, they're not really based on the criteria that we're talking about, but the incidence of those things occurring are greater the older that you get. And I think everyone recognizes that. What the people wanted in the last session, and I think what they want here, is a standard that's based on actual performance, not on age. And I think that's what the people that are here that have testified have tried to present to us and what DMV has tried to provide us. Now, in terms of reporting, we require physicians to report a lot of things. We require them to report child abuse. I think, actually, I can't remember specifically, but I think we put requirements in place for them to report elder abuse also. If we don't have someone out there that actually has contact with the people, that actually has some ability to clearly recognize and have the capability to make that analysis, then we put ourselves in the position of basically not having people that shouldn't be driving, not having them being reported to DMV, still out on the road, potentially endangering other Oregonians. So I think they've done an excellent job with the bill. I know there still might be some issues. I mean, the designating persons may be a legitimate issue, and maybe it should be as simple as designating medical personnel. But I think they've done actually a pretty good job. That's just a short statement, not a question, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Zahner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. right to appeal. You said that you'd have an informal administration or a group of people that somebody could appeal to if they questioned taking the driver's license. Who would that be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Zahner, There's actually, it's a very formal process. It's under the Administrative Procedures Act, they have a contested case hearing, an actual right to a hearing. I was just indicating that if they were to bring issues up to us informally, we would also consider those. But in the last analysis, they're entitled to actually go to before an impartial hearing officer and present their case to them.
Who would the impartial officer be, or what department would it be?
That's with the Department of Employment. The Employment Department has all of the hearings officers for the state. They have a contested case hearing panel that hears cases like this whenever somebody's license is revoked.
Okay.
And
yeah, Representative Zahner, there was a measure we passed last session that created a centralized hearings panel. Basically, any state agency or any complaint that, you know, it all goes to that one board.
Mr. Chairman, if you might explain, is it okay if we explain the basis for that?
Please.
There were some of us that had some concerns. The hearings officers that were directly connected to the agencies in which they were conducting hearings might have some bias in terms of their determination, so that's why they were centralized. And actually, that was the second attempt. It was attempted in 97 also.
Answered my question. Thanks. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Nelson?
Just one final question. If I could please go back to 807090, it was my understanding, you know, when we started the discussion today, we talked about, vision was the one check. And previously, under 807070, there are examinations, right?
Mr. Chair, I'm here for Nelson. Right, that's correct. That 807070 is when you're first getting your license.
Right. And talks about a test of the applicant's eyesight and a test of the applicant's knowledge and understanding of the traffic laws, and perhaps if you had Alzheimer's or something, that you would probably not specifically be able to identify those traffic laws, which would give a clue that there might be something wrong. But I don't see, what I don't see is the advocation for, you know, the driver, for the individual, for the senior citizen. Because when you go back on over to 807090, that was in 070, it says already that if the Department of Transportation, and we don't know who this medical expert is within the Department of Transportation, determines that a person may be ineligible for a license,
mm-hmm.
because the person has a history. Now, I don't know unless DMV does research on people before they come to take the test, of any physical or mental disease or disability that may impair the person's ability to safely operate a vehicle, that the Department of Transportation itself can deny, the person's privilege. It does not say otherwise as far as I see it. So I just, want to protect the right to drive, just as Representative Verger has much better explained, and that we not start, requiring a DMV authority to be a medical, expert on evaluation of individuals, because that's not their, I know that's not their training, that we don't have double standards, and that we, specifically need to provide for individuals to, for there to be a fairness. And I just, I'm not seeing this, and I want to be supportive because I certainly want to protect the driver as well as their family and all citizens, but I'm just concerned about the vagueness of some of this.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, I can appreciate that. What you're referring to is current statute, and again, we don't have medical experts, and it's not based on, even though we make the determination, it's based on information from their physician and from the state health officer. That's the process today, both under 807090. It's, we are the ones, and that's what Mario was trying to say, is it's never going to be the doctor that says Kelly Taylor loses her license. Okay? The doctor may say, or family, on any of that. And when they're saying makes a determination of history of problems, it's either self-reported by the person, because when you renew your license, the only periodic test we give today, once you, those tests in 070 are when you first get your license. Now, if you are having to reestablish, for example, you've been expired over a year, you were revoked and reapplying, there are a lot of reasons why you might come back under 070 as far as testing goes. But the only periodic test we do today is the vision test, and we give that at in-person renewals, which is once every 8 years for persons over the age of 50. And that's what the group was saying. That's just simply not enough to detect other issues. Now, when you renew a license, you are asked some questions on that application about your medical condition, if you've had a problem with loss of consciousness, things like that. If you tell us yes, that is something we would follow up on, okay, but not on our own. We would get information from you and from your physician, and then with that information and the state health officer make the determination. So, yes, we are the agency that ultimately has the responsibility to make the determination, but we are not doing it with our staff on our own. We are doing it with information from the person, the physician, and the state health officer. And the state health officer is a physician.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems like an alternative to having doctors be these reporters of our health condition to the to DMV is to have a test that monitors the ability to respond to traffic conditions, ability to put pressure on the pedals. With modern computer technology, one has the ability to create a realistic driving scenario without being out in traffic, and to have the program calculate on precise parameters and ability to respond. Has the department explored this type of technology, and does this represent an alternative to having conditions reported, in other words, using testing, you know, stronger capacity than reporting?
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Merkley, there are companies out there that are trying to develop such types of equipment, but they are not at the state yet where DMVs are using them, and certainly we would be keeping our eyes on that. But we did discuss that quite a bit in the committee process, and our concern about doing more frequent testing based upon age instead of based upon the fact that you're an at-risk driver continues to make this an age-based approach. And I appreciated the comments of Representative Devlin, who was pointing out that this bill tries to get away from making a decision that we want to do more frequent testing of somebody just because they're older. The last session asked us to study the problem of aging and driving, and so I'm kind of in a situation where I have to report on this because that is the charge that was given to the department, is to look at aging and driving. But through the committee process, we concluded that we're not going to make recommendations that were solely based upon age, but we're going to be based upon the person actually being at risk. And then if we had a test, we would apply that test just to the person who was at risk. We still require to have, we would still need to have somebody refer them to us in order to have an at-risk driver rather than just somebody who, because of age, they arbitrarily have to be tested. Mr. Chair, Representative Merkley, I was reminded also about a test that's called the useful field of view test, which doesn't get at the physical limitations of lower extremities, but it does deal with the cognitive problems associated with driving as people start to decline with dementia. And younger people can have this also with types of conditions such as MS and so on. That particular test is something that we are proposing to pilot in our offices, and that next session we would come back if it was a successful pilot and recommend that test be used and applied to these people that are referred to us as one measure of determining if they in fact have these difficulties.
Thank you both very much for your
Thank
testimony
you.
This morning. Sean McCauley.
Good Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm John McCulley, representing Oregon Psychiatric Association, which is kind of, I guess, interesting that we would be a part of this discussion. Our history goes back, I don't know, 10 to 12 years when we had some concerns expressed from our patients to our doctors on the driver's license renewal form, which at that time specifically asked about mental disorders. And if you check the box that you had a mental disorder, that automatically caused some problems. So we worked with Motor Vehicles Division to have a performance-based evaluation in place rather than a specific diagnosis that puts you into some other category. And I think that's one of the reasons we like the direction being taken by House Bill 3071. I think, as you've heard from other witnesses and Representative Merkley has pointed out, this is much broader than just dealing with elderly people. This involves all sorts of people who have certain conditions that may impact their ability to drive. And from our standpoint, some of those may be mental conditions. So we think that the direction taken by this bill, even though it does have some work to be done on it, is a good direction to go. The language that is proposed to be deleted and replaced by this new approach to us is a positive move, where it is more of a performance-based system rather than what you see in the current statute. We do have, I guess, some concerns, especially with line 17, where the medical condition continues to pop up, wondering if that does mean a diagnosis. And if we truly want to go to a condition that is, or a situation that's performance-based, I think we'd feel more comfortable if we got rid of terms like medical condition, where you actually say if you have XYZ diagnosis, you automatically have more scrutiny, rather than just looking at the results of that condition and the impact on ability to drive. But overall, we think that what is proposed in the bill is positive, and we would be happy to participate as some of the, quote, medical experts in working with the department as they develop the rules.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Just one quick question, Mr. McCulley. I don't see the timeliness in this. I mean, the person reporting from the day that you determined that I have something seriously wrong, do you report it within 24 hours, or what is do you see a requirement for that in this bill?
I don't, Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I don't see it specifically in the bill. The current requirement, of course, says immediately. That at least puts some parameters around it. But at the same time, I would think that during the rule development process that issues like that could be addressed.
Thank you very much for your testimony, John. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3071, and I want to compliment the task force work group that worked hard on this issue. I appreciate the work that you put into it. I'm sensing that there's some concern on the committee this morning about the bill. There might be an ability to maybe narrow some definitions or amend it slightly. So we will hopefully get that work done and then bring the bill back at a future date for a work session. So with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3071. And next, we have House Bill 3064. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3064. And John, will you give us a brief overview of the bill?
Thank you, Chair Starr, members of the committee. House Bill 3064 eliminates the payment of motor vehicle fund fee when obtaining or renewing driver's license, declares emergency effective July 1st, 2001. Just as a reminder, this is one of those AG remedy bills regarding the improper use of highway trust fund dollars. Of course, the fiscal impact, you should have a copy of the fiscal statement before you. And there is because of the elimination of the payment fee, there is an $8 million shortfall to the department. However, this can be referred out of committee directly to the floor, or pass out of committee directly to the floor if you so desire, being the fact that Ways and Means is very much aware of the impact of this bill, and they've already done their work, or they're doing their work. Thank you, Chair.
There's no one signed up. This bill is going to be backfilled. The $8 million is going to be backfilled with general fund dollars, and the program will continue. You just can't fund it this way anymore. To me, it's a relatively simple issue for us to deal with. We can't do this anymore according to the Attorney General and the Constitution. Again, there's no one signed up to testify. Kelly's here if you have questions. And Representative Rosenbaum is nodding. Kelly, would you come up, please?
I have one, too.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Mr. Chair, this is not necessarily a question for the department, but I thought when we discussed this bill or some related bill that we said that it wouldn't be necessary to stop collecting this amount if the amount were to be diverted to a purpose that is still allowable.
I guess I could answer that question. This motor vehicle accident fund fee is so designated in the statute, and in order to delete the authority or to delete the fund, you kind of have to delete the fee as well. Mm-hmm. It doesn't preclude us, though, from leaving the amount of money that's raised in the statute, but probably through another bill, and that work will probably take place with the committee's nod, I guess, in House Bill 2139, the DMV fee bill. That was my original thought, too, was let's just leave the fee. People are already paying it.
Right.
But in consultation with legislative council, it just got to be too messy to do it that way. So I decided to go ahead and just move this bill. We could get rid of the fee, and then we could discuss whether we keep the amount level in the other bill.
And a follow-up. I see that the bill has an emergency clause. Is it also retroactive in any way?
I don't believe so, but Kelly, do you have an answer to that?
Kelly Kidder, Department of Transportation. Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, no, it is not retroactive. It simply becomes effective July 1st. And in July, we will do the final transfer to the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund from fees that were collected from the June transactions.
Representative Zahner.
Thank you, Mr. Starr. I think you probably answered some of my questions. Here we are trying to get increase that licensing fee a little bit to get up to that $17-18. If we could use those funds right here, it seems like it would be a wash. Plus, we might not have to do some computer changes or something. I mean, we'd save that.
You got it.
Too. So that's my thought there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would agree. Any other questions of
Chairman Starr?
Representative Nelson?
In following up with your, I agree to Representative Zahner's remark, but we can arbitrarily do that, right?
Arbitrarily.
Well, you know, yeah. The $10 to $17 requirement for.
Yeah, we have to pass the bill. And it's been 2139.
Oh, so it would not be an amendment to this?
No, it would not. Yeah, again, my thought was, well, let's amend this bill, keep the fee in place, get rid of the program. But it just got too messy. And my work with legislative council actually had an amendment drafted, but it just didn't work well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
I'll drink to that.
Okay. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3064. We'll open a work session on House Bill 3064.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zahner.
I move we send House Bill 3064 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Very good. Representative Zahner has moved House Bill 3064 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
Excuse. Representative Krupp?
Aye.
Representative Merkin?
Aye.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Zahner?
Aye.
Motion passes. Representative Zahner,
do
you want to carry this?
Yeah, I'll
Representative
Zahner,
carry. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3064. And committee members, just a reminder, there's no committee on Friday. It's the no session day, no committee that day.
Oh, really?
So have fun on Friday. And with that, we are adjourned.
Oh!